So, Aloha Mr. Han thinks he could play golf. And Aloha Mr. Han thinks he could drive fast like a race car guy. I know I can't play golf. And I know I can't drive a race car. But I do know I could probably whip his ass at mini golf at Haunted Trails on Harlem Avenue. So let's set it up, Pete. Yeah, dog style. All up in your motherfucking player face. Yeah, dog.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
It's time for The Tainted Glove, starring your favorite man of questionable character, Aloha Mr. Han.
Hey, bud. Let's party.
And the Holy Reverend K-Fids himself. It's go time, so grab a beer, grab a bite, and settle in. It's time for The Tainted Glove.
Aloha, and welcome to this Monday, August 29th edition of The Tainted Glove. I am one of your co-hosts, the man with questionable character, Aloha Mr. Han, and with me as always is my partner, the one and only, the Honorable Reverend K-Fids. And I'll be honest with you, I am already a man of questionable character, but there might be more questions about my character after what I have to say today. And with that, Fids, take it away.
All right. Yeah, we're back and we bad. We here. I don't know. Someone was saying that perhaps they can't use the chat feature, but the chat feature seems to be kind of jumping right now, actually. But welcome. I'm glad you guys could join us. Been a couple weeks, or been 2 weeks, every other week. Yeah. We call that bi-monthly, right? Or bi-weekly, whatever that would be considered.
Bi-weekly,
right? Actually, I just learned something about our show. Did you know?
What's that?
That in the time length that it takes to run our intro for the show, I can make a tuna sandwich. How do I know that?
Nice.
Because I just did. So
outstanding.
I had to do a running eat. I got here. Sorry, we were a little bit late because somebody got here. Uh-oh, I guess I did disable the chat. Let me get into the edit video part of it. I didn't mean to do that. Sorry, guys. Maybe I did edit the chat because I'm tired of your bullshit.
Yeah. Brian said it's working and he scared everyone else off, which...
Let's see here.
It's perfectly understandable, especially if he was trying to wear the Northwest Indiana yo-yo party suit.
Allow comments. It says allow comments. It says comments. Why are comments disabled for this stream, though? Why does it say that? Is it because I said it's made for kids? Maybe I should change that. I should probably.
Yes,
no,
I think
not
you
made
should change
it. So now we can see.
It is not made for kids. No, it is definitely not made for kids.
Ah, here we go. Now, can you comment? Because now it's we're definitely not. A box of trick cereal. We're not, for kids.
Yeah, no.
We are kids in a sense, but we're not. It's not for kids.
Yes.
But that should fix that little glitch. But yeah, thanks for tuning in, guys. Got a lot to talk about. I've got some pessimism, some optimism, and a whole box of whatever you want to call it tonight coming ahead of your way. So thanks for tuning in. Let's get right to it, Pete. We're going to jump into the white. Yes. I mean, this is more pertinent than anything else. You guys have had to deal with this. A big moment for the White Sox. I think the Cleveland Indians have peaked, and the White Sox had a really good opportunity taking on some of the worst teams in baseball, specifically the Arizona Diamondbacks. Great opportunity to take some games, get close to the top, maybe even take the lead in the division. And instead, the White Sox got swept by the Arizona Turdbacks, like literally one of the worst teams in all of baseball at home. To a very, very spirited crowd holding up sell the team signs in the background and really, really letting everybody have it with the Boo Birds. So I guess let's start right there, Pete. Is it time for White Sox fans to wave the white flag and surrender the season that has been 2022? Or should they stand their ground and stand on that hill one last time for the last 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the season and die on that hill? What do you think White Sox fans should do? What are you doing? And what the hell is wrong?
What do I think White Sox fans should do? I'm not going to tell anyone how to fan. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I am going to continue going to the games because the fucking tickets are already paid for. And I am going to continue hanging out with my friends, having a good time, and booing the living shit out of this fucking product. and letting them know exactly how I feel, because this is fucking unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. Here's a hint, White Sox, and this is for the players. This is also for the front office, and this is for anyone who works on the team. If you want to talk the talk, you better walk the walk. So that means, Rick Hahn, get your ass out and answer some serious fucking questions about this team, mainly about what is your plan to fix this next year? And I would pray that the reporters who are interviewing him, that when he starts his lawyer speak and double talk and rephrasing the question that was asked, will prompt him and say, hey, why should anyone believe that you know what the fuck you're doing and how to fix this? Because it's obvious he fucking doesn't. And for those people who were defending Rick, saying, oh, Jerry's holding him back, Jerry doesn't give him money, $190 million payroll, seventh in baseball, how much did he spend on fucking relievers? And he needed to go get more. All right? The guy can't identify fucking talent to save his life. This is a guy that thought it was a good idea to bring an obviously finished Edwin Encarnacion in 2020, who was a good idea to bring in an obvious never gonna be Nomar Mazara in, who thought, hey, let's bring Adam Eaton back. Yeah, that's a great fucking idea. How did that work out? You've had a hole in right field forever. You even had the nerve to say last offseason that you needed to address right field and second base. You didn't. So guess what? That is an absolute failure by you. Now the players? The players need to suck it up too. They own a lot of this too. And I'll tell you what bothers me. I sit there and watch this team, and they can hit singles. Oh, yeah, they have no problem hitting singles, except when there's runners in scoring position. Then all of a sudden, it's like they can't hit shit. I can't tell you how many times they've had runner at third, runner at second and third, bases loaded with nobody out, and get a big fucking goose egg on the scoreboard. This is an institutional, organizational failure at the biggest degree. And there needs to be a culture change there. And I know there's been rumors floating around that, oh, Rick may be shuffled around. He's being promoted up. It's the Dilbert principle in full effect. You rise to the level of your incompetence. That's what he's doing, because he's probably going to get fucking promoted. And then they're going to bring Chris Getz in to be the new GM, which is more of the same. White Sox fans, you will never, ever have a consistent winning product with this front door office and this organizational structure the way it is. Because frankly, they're losers. They don't know how to fucking win. They don't have the balls or the brains to do what it takes to fucking win. You know, you look at someone like the Dodgers, you look at someone like the Yankees, they go out and do what it takes to win. If they go, oh, we got enough, you know what? You never have fucking enough. Let's go get more. And to all those people who were ripping on me when I said, why don't you go get Joey Gallo and put him in right field? Whoop. Even if he doesn't hit, his fucking defense will improve you. Mm-hmm. Hey, he's looking pretty fucking good with the Dodgers right now. And I had someone actually have the nerve to say to me, well, it's because he's on a good team where there's no pressure. What? The Yankees weren't? Yankees weren't a good team?
I will say this, though, and I can say this with 100%. Yeah,
you know him, don't you?
Yeah. Joey Gallo is a West Coast dude, born and raised on the West Coast.
He's a laid-back dude, I get it.
He's played most of his summer baseball and his spring break tournaments, you know, when he played at Bishop Gorman, even when he was in high school, played, you know, in California, in L.A. He leaves New York, which is a toxic ball of shit, in my opinion. Playing for the Yankees, I feel bad because my guy, Chasen Shreve, just signed with the Yankees again. He's about to punish himself because he's going to go back to an organization with shitbag fans. All New York fans are shitbags to me, really, to be honest. New York Mets, I hate him more. But Yankees fans suck. They suck too. And Gallo, they hate their players when they love them. They boo them. They treat them like shit. Yes. And Joey Gallo is a perfect example of what happens when you escape New York and that bullshit teapot, whatever hot kettle you want to call it, and you go to a place like L.A. where it's a completely different place. It's a different vibe. He goes to L.A. They're a winning franchise, but they know they're a winning franchise. They're not trying to be a winning franchise that they used to be back in the day, which is what Yankees really kind of sell, is constantly, look what we did. We got all these championships, but not now. Yeah. You ain't there now. Nope. And nope. He goes to L.A. where they're used to winning. He gets a house on the beach. He goes home every night. He chills. He's not far from his family. His family lives less than 4 hours away from a quick drive. He's just at a different place where Dodgers fans can be intense, but they're only intense for like five innings because they get there in the third and they leave in the seventh. So you really only have to bear with them for roughly five innings out of nine anyway. So you're dealing with a totally different kind of crowd. And he's just happier. He's happy, you know, and that makes a difference. And I'm not entirely sure, you know, I know you said it would have been a great move. I'm not entirely sure this White Sox fan base would have been good for Joey Gallo after seeing
this. Okay, that's a fair point. This fan base. But you would, it's hard to answer that now because you would have had him a month ago. Maybe things turn around. Maybe they don't. Maybe you get more of the same.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say a couple other things. There's been a recent development, and I believe the story broke either yesterday or today, which might actually be a good thing in the long term for the White Sox. And give me a minute to explain. The minor leagues are working with the MLBPA to unionize. They're not part of the union right now in the minors. Only the major league players are part of the union. If that happens, that would mean you have minimum salaries and things like that. That is totally against the White Sox business model. And one could hope that that would be another driving factor to have the current ownership of the White Sox. And remember, it is not only Jerry, but Jerry has investors he has to deal with. Mm-hmm. Most of them are in their 80s. And there's some in their 90s, too, to be honest with you. Lee Stern of the Sting is one of the people. And let me tell you, Lee Stern's a freaking nutcase. But maybe that's another motivating factor for them to get out because the cost of doing business will be more with unionized minor leaguers. One can hope because, unfortunately, the White Sox have reached the Bill Wirtz Blackhawks phase in life. If anyone remembers that in like 2000, the 2000s up until Bill Wirtz passed away, and I believe it was 07 or 08. I can't remember which one specifically, but how bad that franchise was. And I can even give you the comparisons. Bob Pulford, who always had a job with the Blackhawks, has an equivalent with the White Sox. His name is Kenny Williams. And don't discount Kenny meddling in there because the structure there is so perfect for them right now. The lack of accountability structure is so perfect for them right now because you have Kenny who will hide behind Rick and let Rick take the arrows. You have Rick who will hide behind Tony and let Tony take the arrows for him. Tony La Russa, let me back up and say this. It will be Tony La Russa's decision on whether or not he is the manager next year. It will not be Rick Hahn's decision. It will not be Kenny Williams' decision. It will be Tony La Russa's decision in consultation with Jerry Reinsdorf. You may not like it. That's the way it's going to be. And I'll be honest, I'm 50-50 on whether or not he returns. Part of me says he's going to sit there and go, what the hell do I need this shit for? I got a bullshit roster, a stupid fucking front office. Why the hell should I stay? But the other 50% being, God damn it, I'm going to make this work because I got a fucking ego and I'm a Hall of Fame baseball person. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The next month is going to be really telling on which way they go. But I will be honest. They need to blow up the entire coaching staff. I would even say you need to blow up Ethan Katz. But if you have to keep one person, I would keep Katz. You need to bring in an entire front office. You need to blow them up too. And you need to bring in an entire front office that has no ties, none. Like people talking about AJ Pierzynski as the next manager of the White Sox and Chris Getz as the next GM of the White Sox. Let me just say this about AJ Pierzynski. Yes, he was the player they needed in 2005. He provided them with the grit, you know, the macho-ness and all, you know, the grindiness that they needed. But
you can say Have you watched AJ do a broadcast? He was their meatball. He was their meatball. You got to have a meatball on your team. He's their meatball. That's not a guy you want as your head coach. Sorry.
Right. Have you watched AJ do a TV broadcast? Have you had the pleasure of watching it?
It's not good.
No. He's not prepared. What makes you think if he can't get prepared for a broadcast that he does once a week, he's going to be prepared for a 162-game schedule?
Yep. Exactly. Well, you know, so, and your point too, it leads me to a good question too, because it was debated today. There was a little bit of talk. Yes. Our guy Yumper kind of tagged us in a potential. There was a, I don't know, there's something on one of the radio 670, I think today they were talking. And
It was yesterday.
Actually. Yesterday. And it brought up the idea, and it brings up a really good question, because there's been some names floated around. And of course, the easy name in Chicago to throw out there is the guy that's taken two cursed franchises that had been 100 years roughly without a world championship, and took those and made them into winning franchises by basically revamping the entire organization from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And that'd be, of course, Theo Epstein. But there was a lot of resistance by a lot of White Sox fans in the discussion. For whatever reasons, one was the weirdest one.
Like,
don't.
The reason
you don't
is
want,
simple.
You don't want Theo because he traded away for
that's not it.
Whatever. But
that's not it.
But the question that's that it leads it. Me to is Theo is one of the ones that tossed around. But then our guy Prof Jesus Strawman also talked about the Andrew Friedman tree. From the Dodgers. Now, Andrew Friedman, actually, I think he said two of the last, this last year, and there were two of the four in the last four teams that were left. So in the NLCS, ALCS, that were Friedman. It was Friedman or a Friedman tree member. And I think it was two the year before. And so I guess that poses a question. I guess it's a twofold question for you, because then you can kind of dig in what you were about to answer. You know, who do you decide? Is it Theo? Or do you go with the Friedman? Because again, Friedman, the Friedman tree could very well be another Friedman, or it could be like a guy like Jed Hoyer, who at current hasn't proven that outside of Theo's shadow that he actually can put a winning team together, because he's been in that job for 2 years and the Cubs have like a 35 games or 40 games under 500 record in that time that he's been, you know, in charge of that. So the question is, you know, could it be that? So for you, Pete, you know, whether it's Theo, and of course, you hear some of the excuses. You can explain why White Sox fans were, for some reason, averse to the greatest franchise changer in the history of the game when it comes to front office, which is just such a strange, weird, because he was a Cub, I can't touch him. It's like, stop.
That's crazy. He was a Cub. We don't need your Cubness here.
You don't need that seven straight years in the playoffs and the World Series. Yeah, you don't need that, right?
Don't need that.
Go back to this kind of shit.
You need a White Sox. How many playoff appearances has this fucking team had? They just were celebrating this year the fact that they made back-to-back playoff appearances.
And they've not done it for the first time
in their existence.
And they still haven't done it in a full season. One of those was a 60-game fast food drive-through.
They got lucky in 20. Because remember, they dropped from second to seventh in a week.
And they expanded the playoffs that year, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. They were expanded than compared to normal.
Yes, they were expanded. Some people have argued with me saying they would have made the playoffs in 2020, even if they weren't expanded. I disagree with that, because if they would have made the playoffs in 2020, if they would have been under the old format, they would have been out. They would have been out. So, you know, it's sort of like the Dodgers don't care that they won a World Series in 2020 in only a 60-game schedule. But at the same time, do you think they'd like to win a World Series in a 162-game schedule? I bet they do.
Mm-hmm. They want that. They're hungry for it.
And here's the difference.
Here's the thing, they're talking about winning a World Series because they're unsatisfied with their World Series in a 60-game season. The White Sox and some White Sox fans are happy, or not really. Nobody's happy right now in White Sox fandom, but we're happy with trying to sell that 60-game season just because you made the playoffs. Guess what? If 60 games and a World Series isn't enough for the world champion Dodgers, just making the playoffs in 2020 doesn't count. It doesn't even count. Like, if you won the World Series, you get a little bit of an asterisk. If you just barely made the playoffs, no one gives a shit. So, really, the White Sox have made the playoffs last year.
Yes.
And this year, they're not going to be able to repeat. So, they're still going to follow that. They haven't gone back-to-back in the postseason. How many years? Or has it ever happened? Where they've gone back?
Technically, this was the first time it ever happened in 20 and 21.
That's insane. And this old of a franchise that back-to-back postseason berths is some sort of sense of achievement 100-plus years into their history.
And they fucking advertise it in their commercials. I'm like, how fucking sad and pathetic is that? Honestly, how sad and pathetic is that? Hey, we went to the playoffs back-to-back years. Well, guess what? This ownership group has owned this team for 40 years. This GM has been in place for a fucking decade. It's unacceptable. You know, people need to stop being accepting the mediocrity. And I am hoping that their reactions especially this weekend. And I'm really curious to see what next weekend brings. And then the following weekends when they're at home. Because I don't think you're going to see as much during the week because, frankly, I see attendance dramatically dropping off during the weeks. So you really have to key on the Friday and Saturday night games to get the true fan reaction. Because Sunday is kids' day. So a lot of people bring their kids. And, you know, they don't want to be rebel rousers when their kids are there.
I don't know. I picture a bunch of 9-year-old kids being like, fuck you, Tony.
Yeah.
Like, except the Lagoos, just like my dad, wanted,
you know,
like the little kid in the Jackie Robinson, except not obviously saying that stuff, but same thing, following dad's lead and calling, you know, the White Sox players bums and stuff. Learn from dad. Hey, model the behavior. But do you think, to answer your question,
yeah,
I was going to say, what is your take? Cause I know you want outside of the organization. What's your optimal of those choices, or are all of them fine by you, or what are you thinking?
I would say, honestly, all of them are fine by me, but I'm going to throw a couple caveats on it. The thing with Theo, I don't think Theo would come back to just be a GM or a president of baseball ops or anything like that.
Nope.
I honestly believe it has to be tied to an ownership stake. I mean, even to get him to listen, you have to say, I'll give you 2% of the team or 3%. What? Throw a number out there, you know? You have to give him an ownership stake. So that's the thing with Theo. Now,
Theo is done. I think Theo is an owner of a baseball franchise.
He's an owner or the next commissioner.
There is no hiring Theo Epstein to be president of baseball operations. Yes. That ship in his career has sailed.
Yep.
It's being the owner of an ownership group or bust. Yep. And that's what White Sox fans can maybe pray for. Although I'm not entirely sure that Theo couldn't put together an ownership group to buy it out from Daddy Ricketts on the north side either, because there's a connection there. But thinking that if Theo's going to even be an option is a little bit kind of pie in the sky, because he's done. He's going to be a team owner, or he's going to be the commissioner of baseball, or he's going to start his own traveling rock band. Those are your three options.
Yes.
That's it. So,
yep.
Continue.
I absolutely agree. I mean, in order to engage him in conversation, an ownership stake has to be on the table to start the conversation. But there's not even a guarantee that he would take it. But that's what has to be on the table to start the conversation. And there's been a lot of grumblings about the Sox may be going up for sale sooner rather than later. Sooner being like in the off season. I don't know how that'll happen, because right now you got two teams that are up on the market, and I don't see baseball really being excited about having three teams for sale, because they want to maximize value, and the way to decrease value is to have multiple teams up for sale at the same time. But supposedly the Nationals sale is supposed to be closing any day now, and then you got Artie Moreno getting out from the Angels. Talk about a guy who's had it much better than the White Sox and had worse results. You know, you've had two generational talents on that team. And those tweets you see are funny and sad at the same time. You know, Mike Trout went 4-for-5 with 2 home runs and 7 RBIs, and the Angels lost 11-8. You know, those kind of things. Shohei Ohtani had 10 strikeouts, 2 home runs, and the Angels lost 12-2. You know, those kind of things. It's sad, but that's another factor to consider. And I know we've talked about Oakland moving to Las Vegas in the past, and recently there's been sort of a shift in tone about the A's going to Vegas. Basically, I thought it would be a done deal, but it's sounding more and more like MLB is not going to help the A's get to Vegas, because MLB wants that Las Vegas carrot as an expansion franchise so that they could really get some money in the pockets of the other 29 owners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my people here in Vegas say the A's thing is it's dead. But the expansion talk is 100% alive. That's what the people that I've spoken to here in Vegas, and I'm an optimist. I've been wanting this A's thing to happen, just get a major league team here. But every time I talk to, especially the two people that I think know more than anything else about what's going on in the city, they've got their finger on the pulse, like better than anybody I know. And both of them are like, it's dead. It's dead. All these headlines and all these, you know, everything is leverage. It's just a pressure, everything up in the Bay Area. And it is about, you know, getting a franchise here that is brand new. Vegas doesn't love the Raiders. The Raiders are a transplant. They're somebody else's franchise that came here, and they're going to eventually probably fall in love with the Raiders in some way, shape, or form over time. But the way that the city has rallied around the Golden Knights, its own, Vegas born is the hashtag. Vegas loves its own. So UNLV basketball is always beloved. And you've got the Golden Knights as its first real pro franchise. Starting a expansion team here in Las Vegas by far is a better idea for both, like you said, for Major League Baseball, but I think also for the actual team to have success here. No offense, everybody looks at the A's and they're looking at how what a joke they are right now. Like all of a sudden the A's are going to come to Vegas and they're going to fix what's broke in their front office that has like 12 people showing up to their games every night. That's dangerous to me. Unless they were to sell the team completely, there's no point in this. And so you've got that. So you've got to have this team to be an expansion team. So the A's thing here is, I mean, it's as dead in the water as you can get. I wouldn't listen to a single headline that says anything about Vegas inching closer to landing the Athletics, because that is just simply just negotiating in the press. And it's just simply not true.
Yeah, and I was saying I thought it was a done deal, but obviously it sure is not looking that way. So have to be, you know, transparent in all that as well, as far as that goes. But as far as the White Sox, this season has been the worst season, and in some respects the best season for the fans. It's been the worst season because of expectations. You know, they were expected, and the fans bought in, the players bought in, the front office bought in. You know, Joe Kelly was on the radio before to see, we're the best damn team in the AL. Well, fucking play like it, because you sure as Christ aren't. But it's been the best thing for the fans too, because unfortunately, you know, it's like Alcoholics Anonymous. Acknowledging the problem is the first step. Hopefully the team acknowledges the many flaws that they have, because what, as I've said before, and people don't like when I say this, I don't care, because it's the fucking truth. Rick Hahn has absolutely failed in this rebuild. Absolutely failed. Because the rebuild was done because they wanted to have a pipeline of talent and depth. It's not there. The pipeline of talent and depth was there for two reasons. To weather injuries. By the way, what have they had this year? Injuries. And to use as assets to fill in pieces they may need via trade. Failed at both. And I got into a discussion with someone on Twitter last week saying that it was a failure and they did nothing to address the problems. And the person came back to me and asked a fair question. Well, what second baseman were out there on the free agent market that they could sign? I said, that's a fair point. No one really. But if they had these trade assets they talk about, maybe they could go trade for one.
And then, of course, you bring up the question as well. What about that guy that they did trade that played second base that currently is errorless for the Chicago Cubs? And since he's returned at the beginning of August, has been one of their best hitters. In fact, he has 3 hits tonight against the Blue Jays. 3 hits.
How many games has he played?
He's played now 70. Okay, let's see what the total of games.
Oh, so he'd fit right in with the rest of the team injury-wise.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's played in well, he's got 200 at-bats, basically, so whatever that is.
So he'd fit right in with the rest of the team.
He's playing well, but yeah, I mean, honestly, they didn't go out and fill the need. And
no, they identified it. They said this is what we need, and they did nothing.
Yeah, Swole makes a good point. Kyle Schwarber hit his 36th homer tonight. Didn't need him. Another guy you could have gone out and gotten. Probably just
he was there for the taking.
So, yep. There's a lot of sleeping on their hands. Sitting on their hands is a Rick Hahn special, it looks like. When it's time to actually pull the trigger, he doesn't. And unfortunately,
I honestly think he just enjoys his seat at the table and doesn't want to leave. It's like a never-ending buffet or something.
I feel like he has such a horrible sense of reading a room. I feel like I feel like he leaves a meeting thinking that he's the win. Like it's his to lose. And in the end, he's the guy that they're all kind of mocking and joking and giggling behind his back. Like, that motherfucker thought that he actually had a chance in this.
Yeah. Well, that's just it.
We'll take your offer.
What's the old poker line? If you can't identify the mush in 10 minutes. Yeah, you're the mush.
If you can't identify the sucker at the table inside of 10 minutes, you are the sucker. Yeah.
Yes. There you go. Mm-hmm. That's him. I mean, there's at least two times, well, actually three, let's say, where Rick Hahn could not read the market. Manny Machado was one. You know, and fans were going off about, well, that was never a real offer. And I'm like, just remember something about that Machado offer. Kenny and Rick, and I'm using their words, went to Jerry and said, this is the offer that we need to give him to get him to sign. Jerry signed off on it. So it's not Jerry's fault that those fucking clowns can't read the room.
Yep. Yep.
Jerry told him, he said, is this the offer? Yes. Jerry signed off on it. So they were the ones who failed on that.
And it's Tony La Russa's fault that he doesn't have the depth that he would need in with everything that's going on with his roster too. Like the blame is misplaced. There's blame to go around. Don't get me wrong. But there is not a fair share of the blame being passed to certain individuals in this. And let's be honest, Kenny Williams, maybe he needs to go. I'm sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
This is happening under his watch as well. This is not someone that seems to be, you know, I know he's a big name for the White Sox. And again, he's been a part of the organization for quite a few, you know, for a long time. He was part of the title.
He was drafted by GM when they won the title.
Sometimes it's time to say goodbye.
He should have been fired.
It's time to say goodbye and start fresh and start new.
Yes.
You need somebody that's in power that's willing to pull the trigger. And with that said, kind of as a pivot, speaking of pulling a trigger today, it was reported, I want to say, who was it? John Morosi was on, I believe it was it ESPN Radio or 672 also?
670.
Today saying that he is not going to be surprised if the Chicago Cubs this offseason make a trade for Shohei Ohtani with 1 year left in Ohtani's contract. And for me, there's 670. Yeah, 670. Mm-hmm. You think about that idea and then you read the comments. And then you read the comments because the Cubs fans, at least a portion of the Cubs fan base, has been gaslit into thinking that prospects win World Series championships, not actual major league players, somehow magically guys that are sitting at single A will make the 2023 Cubs a champ. Well, yeah, you know how you do that with those types of prospects? You make trades for guaranteed established major league stars, okay? Cup fans are like, no, don't trade it.
But there's something you have to do, and the White Sox are terrible at this as well. You have to be more critical of your minor league system than the other minor league systems. Meaning, and the Braves in the 90s were brilliant at this. You always heard them build up players like a Denny Nagel, someone like that, right? Mm-hmm. But then they had these other guys like Chipper Jones, who you never heard them say a word about. They sort of like tucked him away, tuck him away over here so nobody knows about him so that he's ours.
Yep.
They knew who they needed to build up to trade. Ryan Klesko was another one, if you remember. Ryan Klesko. They knew how to gauge their minor leagues. They knew the pieces they needed. Yep. They knew the pieces that they needed to build up to trade. Neither team, in my opinion, in this town can do that honestly and objectively.
Well, and when you look at this kind of opportunity with the Cub fans, and Yumper says it too, and it's not all Cub fans. I mean, not all Cub fans are idiots. Right. Not all Sox fans are idiots. But when you look at their reasoning behind not wanting to trade for Shohei Ohtani, because they don't want to lose these prospects, and then it's, well, he's going to be a free agent in a year. Why not just wait until he goes to free agency, and then you can sign him in free agency? Excuse me. It's not the Cubs and then nobody else. There is going to be other franchises that go,
San Diego,
I can get
Los
Shohei
Angeles.
Ohtani this offseason by trading a few of my 19-year-old prospects? Hell, where do I sign? And they're going to take him and they're going to extend him. You don't just trade for somebody and throw out prospects for a one-year deal. It's you literally have a deal in place if you make that move to extend them for the rest of their career in Chicago. And that's what Cubs fans don't seem to get. Yeah. And
use Mookie Betts as the perfect example of that.
Hit 30th home run last night, by the way, for the Dodgers. And that's you're exactly right. And this is what Cubs fans have been now. And this is the weird byproduct of how many of them have been so gaslit by this bullshit non-rebuild is that they actually feel that all of those prospects, all of them are far more valuable than arguably the most valuable player on both sides of the baseball, that we have ever seen in the last 50 to 70 to 80 years. A two-way player that both swings it and pitches it at a high level and brings excitement to a franchise, fills two different holes, which is two girls, one cup, and Cub fans still can't wrap their head around letting go of Brennan Davis, who is not Shohei Ohtani. And if he becomes a Shohei Ohtani, cool. But he ain't him right now. And do you want to win right now, or do you want to just keep kicking the can down the road and talking about how awesome it is in Iowa and how sweet it is in South Bend? And, you know, instead of, God dang, dogpiling and winning a freaking World Series at Wrigley, for God's sakes. Like, I don't get it, but I do get it because this is the byproduct of the Ricketts family and their gaslighting through their media sycophants and their water carriers. They have trained Cub fans to care less about the product on the field with the Major League team and more about the prospects. And this is where the Cub fans now have been kind of relegated to, passing on things like Shohei Ohtani because they don't want to lose some 19-year-old kid that may or may not play a single meaningful inning at the Major League level. And this is a problem.
Let me give Cub fans a harsh reminder of that philosophy. I think it was 2010. The White Sox had the opportunity to trade for Adrian Gonzalez. You know what it would cost? Gordon Beckham. Sox fans were, oh, you can't trade Gordon Beckham. Oh, my God, you can't trade him. I was like, Gordon, I'll drive you to the freaking airport, man. If I have to, I'll drive you to San Diego. You know, and that's just it. It's like, yes, part of it, I believe, with the fans is the fans understand that the team talent evaluation wise leaves something to be desired on both sides of town. You know, and if you cannot critically look at yourself and say, here are the core players that we cannot move, you put them off on one side. And you say, here are the players who, yes, they're very nice. But if we can get the right offer for them, guess what? They're gone. And again, it's not a case of trading for the sake of trading. It's trading if the price is right. Every player has a price. Granted, like I've told people for years, in Chicago, there's only two athletes that I would say were, untouchables. Only two. And I'll give you a hint. Neither one played baseball. One was this guy from North Carolina. It was named Michael something.
Might have known him, yeah. He owned a restaurant or something? Yeah, he was a restaurateur.
The other guy was sweet or something like that. Yeah. You know, ran a lot.
Yeah, I like to run up a hill. Yeah, he liked to run up a hill in Barrington all the time.
Yes, exactly. Those were the only two who I would say were untouchables. So, you know, and I've had people say, well, Frank Thomas was an untouchable. I'm like, hey, if the Mariners called and offered Ken Griffey Jr. for Frank Thomas,
take it.
Love you, Frank. See you later. If the Pirates or Giants called and said, we'll give you Barry Bonds for Frank Thomas, love you, Frank. See you later.
Exactly.
You know, I've also had people go, well, what about Urlacher? Well, if the Ravens called and said, I'll give you Ray Lewis for Brian Urlacher, love you, Brian. See you later.
Yeah, absolutely. And that brings us to another, you know, about grass is greener kind of mentality. Because here you have Cub fans saying, no, I don't want to trade these prospects for Shohei Ohtani. But at the same time, clamoring for this offseason, which is kind of a little pivot again, we're going to pivot over to this, is this offseason has one of the best shortstop classes, free agent classes, in a bit. You're going to have, obviously, more than likely, you're going to get a Carlos Correa that opts out of his contract. You're going to get a Xander Bogaerts. You're going to get a Trey Turner. But here we are. All of this is happening. And right now, this season, and over the last two seasons, really, Nico Hoerner for the Cubs has been an all-star shortstop. Defensively, he grades out as the best defensive shortstop in Major League Baseball. Okay? So that's step one. At shortstop. Not at second base. At shortstop. Which, picking it at shortstop is like having a catcher that is fantastic defensively. I don't really give two shits if my shortstop hits 215 if he picks it better than anybody else in the league. Just like I don't care if my catcher hits 210 if, as long as he's the best receiver in the game. Those two positions to me are fine with me to have guys that are just, but that's the thing is Nico Hoerner isn't. Nico Hoerner swings it. Nico Hoerner, he's hitting 291. He's got a 750 OPS. He's got 15 stolen bases. He scored, where's his run scores? He scored 42 runs. He's got 18 doubles, 3 triples, 8 jacks. He's driven in 45. He's struck out only 48 times all season. Doesn't strike out a bunch. Again, he just does it everywhere. And here we are. Cub fans going, I want Correa. I want Bogarts. I want Turner. Oh, Nico can just move to second. Bullshit.
Well, you know, he is no Lurie Garcia, according to Brian.
Bullshit to me. All right. Nico Horner is my Cubs shortstop. If they want to go get Carlos Correa, if they want to get Xander Bogarts, which they're not going to because it's going to cost them a comp pick, and we know how that works with the Cubs organization. If they want to go get
there's something else people need to consider about that. Any free agency is a two-way street. Are the Cubs going to be in a position to win next year?
And that depends on what they do. And that's this whole thought of this is I don't want Correa.
Do you think Correa or Bogarts is going to commit long term?
Bogarts won't because Bogarts has the comp pick and the Cubs want nothing to do with it. You can cross him off the Cubs list for all I care. He's not coming. Jed is not going to give up a draft pick, especially what they've been doing with this farm stuff and the focus on it. So you're really thinking about Trey Turner and Carlos Correa. And this is what I'm saying right now. I am not okay. Nico Horner's my shortstop. But if you're going to get those guys, go for it. Drop those guys an extra $5 million for an inconvenience fee and say, hey, here's an extra $5 million. You're going to play third base for us. We don't need you defensively at shortstop because our franchise is better off defensively with Nico Horner at shortstop. And here's my test for who these guys are. If any of those free agents say, no, I've got to play shortstop or I'm not signing, they can take a long walk off a short pier because they don't give two shits about winning. If they did, they'd say, let me slide in at third. Nico gives us our best shortstop. I'll give us our best third baseman. We have an opportunity. What do we have at second base? Now, this is obviously assuming the Cubs have some sort of option there, whether it's, magical or other. But Nico Horner is the best defensive shortstop in baseball. Moving him to another position does not make the Cubs a better team. And that's how you're going to know. If you drop the guy an extra $5-10 million in his salary over the couple of years, you could totally have Carlos Correa, who's only going to be playing the left side of the infield for maybe 2 or 3 years before he moves over to first base anyway, and then rounds out the last 2-3 years of his career as a DH, a la, what's his name in Detroit?
Miggy?
Yeah. And so,
Cabrera.
Cabrera, yeah. Golly, wow. I'm losing my mind. But so that is where you're looking at. So I'm just at this point, Nico Horner has been too good. He's earned it. It's his spot. And here we have Cub fans not wanting to trade a bunch of teenagers for Shohei Ohtani, who swings it and pitches, but they don't give two shits about the guy that actually is doing the job for them every single day. Why? Because he doesn't tag with his eyes closed and do no-look tags. If he was Javi Baez doing what Nico Horner is doing right now, he would have a statue outside of Wrigley Field from those Javi Baez stands that are meatballs. It would be the most every day talking about how much of a magician he is. Nico Horner is a better shortstop than Javi Baez, and I will die on that hill all day long. Because you know what? He fields the routine, and then he makes the great plays. And that's the difference. Javi Baez was too big of a slapdick to ever crash on a routine play without trying to get cute and showboat his ass off. And he clanked more than his share of and that's why, again, if he was playing that shortstop and he was playing a whole season, really, he'd probably lead the league in errors at this point because it's the routine. Errors are indicative of someone's failure to field the routine ground ball. You don't get an error for diving at a ball in the deep in the hole and it clanking out of your glove. You get an error because you missed a ball hit directly at you and you pulled up too soon. You tried to field it off to the side. You got tweened, whatever it is. It's your fault. It's an error. It's a routine play that was not correctly picked. And that's where Javi does it. That's where all these guys, all this stuff, Cub fans are sitting here and they're just, give me Correa. Give me Turner. Screw Nico Horner. He can just move over. The dude has done nothing but just get it done for the Cubs. And if you think that Nico Horner should move off a shortstop, you obviously don't care about winning. All right? Those guys, both Turner could play second. He's fine at second base too. Pay him an extra $10 million to go play second. Pay Correa an extra, hell, go get them both and just blow it up. Give Turner what he wants, an extra 10. Play second, give Correa what he wants, extra 10, play third. There you got your infield. Then Patrick Wisdom could go over to first base and strike out, and go 0 for a game every five game for 5 straight games and then hit his 2 home runs in 2 straight games and then go 0 for again and nobody will give a shit because you have better offense. But I can't stand this. I've loved Nico since they drafted him, and even before that when I watched him at Stanford. And this is just, it's insane to me that the dude is hitting his prime and playing such great shortstop and hitting the ball like an all-star. And it's just like, so what? It's because he's not flashy. He doesn't act like a jackass. And he doesn't flip off people and start fights that he can't finish. He just simply plays the game. And Chicago can't embrace someone that just does the job. It's so weird for a hard-nosed blue-collar city to ignore the dudes that play the game like a gosh darn blue-collar fucking guy. That's the problem that I have. They want something else. They want showboats and sequins. They want Elton John out there playing the piano, not Beethoven. Beethoven's too boring for me. I want Elton John in his sequins dancing around. And that's the problem that they have. They don't know what they have right in front of them because they're too busy looking for the shiny thing when the shiny thing is fool's gold.
And the thing you have here, where the desire for the shiny thing comes from? That's the ESPN Sports Center effect.
That's true, yeah.
They don't have highlights of a guy making a routine throw to first base. They have the Javi Baez like pulling a play out of his ass, but they don't show the three plays where he clanked it or sailed it into the dugout. They don't show any of that.
You need to bring back the not so top 10 every night.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And that's the thing too. It's like, you know, some players get elevated because they show up on the top 10 like once or twice a week and everybody thinks they're these great players. It's like, no, not really. You know, like everybody thought Adam Dunn was this big power source. I'm like, the guy strikes out 250 times a fucking year, for God's sakes. Sorry. Yes, people are going, well, you strikeouts come with power. Yeah. Ask all those guys in the 500 home run club about how many strikeouts they have.
Strikeouts come with power.
Compared to the
ask all those guys
in the 500 home run club.
Getting some reverb
about how
there.
Many strikeouts they had.
Strikeouts come with power.
Compared to their power.
Ask all those guys in the 500.
Oh, wow. Hey, what's going on? Some this reverb is so weird.
How many strikeouts?
Wow, that was so strange right there. All I did was went to Twitter, and somehow this video was up on Twitter and it started talking. Oh, that was weird. That's why you heard yourself. That was, ooh.
Well, I do have a sexy voice. I know that.
I was like, aloha in the round. ASMR.
Yes, exactly. Aloha unhinged. Aloha. But the thing is, with the Cubs, you know, again, you know much more about the Cubs than I do. I question, I'm going to separate the Correa, Bogarts, Turner versus the Shohei Ohtani. Because, yes, Ohtani would be a trade. And to your point, making a trade for Ohtani, the talent level I give up is based on the amount of time I'm going to have Ohtani there. Meaning, if you can negotiate an extension with him, you give up more talent. If you're only going to have him for 1 year and do the White Sox thing and hope that he'll fall in love with this town and sign here for a hometown discount, you give up less talent. I don't see Shohei Ohtani wanting to be in anywhere in the Midwest. And this is not me Cub bashing. This is me Midwest bashing. Because what is it? It's cold in April. He doesn't want that. He wants the bright lights. There's only one place in the Midwest that gets the bright lights. Well, two places, really. Chicago and St. Louis. That's about it. New York gets the bright lights. Boston gets the bright lights. The Dodgers, the Padres, because it seems like they're signing everybody else. Why the hell not? So I don't see Ohtani. I see Ohtani taking a map of the U.S. and just putting a big X through the middle of it for where he wants to go free agent wise.
I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, the Cubs already have Seiya Suzuki, who's like a god and now with the Cubs too. So that should be a very interesting part of the playoff too. But, you know, one thing we can both agree on though, this is the thing is Cubs fans and Sox fans, while we've had collective misery of different kinds this year with the baseball, it's about that time of year to come together as fans, White Sox, Cub fans, all together to enjoy the 2022 iteration of the Monsters of the Midway, the Chicago Bears, the undefeated in the preseason juggernaut beast of the Bears team that we see, who on Sunday thrashed the Cleveland Browns. Well, I didn't thrash him, but we thrashed him in the first half when it actually mattered, when it wasn't like the eighth string guys in the fourth quarter getting charity touchdowns. But they were up, what was that, 27 and nothing at half, or 21 and nothing at half?
21 nothing, yes.
And so Justin Fields goes out and, goes out and throw. I mean, he played just the first half. He goes 14 of 16, 156 yards and three touchdowns. In the first half, of 146.9 quarterback rating. This after everyone's been just crapping on him as you know, they don't give him any weapons. They're setting him up to fail. All of a sudden, Luke Getsy's offense catered around Justin Fields, rolling him out, giving him the opportunity, using the strengthness. And I'll be honest, an offensive line that got dogged. They were dogging. They were playing like dogs out there. Giving him his protection, gave him all the time he needed, threading the needles, throwing missiles, nice little touch. The rollout play that he threw, the touchdown to Cole Kmet, that was two dudes that have been working together for 2 years now, basically just figuring out something on the fly together. He waves him over a little bit, and if you see that play, it's absolutely fantastic. Cole Kmet is standing by himself because he used his eyes to convince the defense that he was about to break. And so they had to break off either Kmet or they had to attack Justin Fields for, you know, because he's so fast and he's going to get a couple yards there. Or they stay on him and Justin does take the 10, 12 yards that were up in front of him. And so it's insane how Matt Nagy never saw this shit. But just seeing the offensive play calling over the course of the preseason, seeing how they're starting to gel with the line and seeing some disappointing linemen, a.k.a. cough, cough, you know who, last year's second round pick, all of a sudden playing some good football after it was almost to the point where the Bears were going to be trading him.
By the way, there's rumors that might still happen.
Right. But it's got him motivated. Whatever it is, yep. It's working. Mm-hmm. And so you got that. So, obviously you got to watch the game as well. You've seen this Bears offense over the last couple of years. You've seen how frequently it failed to play to the strengths of its offense, especially its signal caller, whether it's, you know, Justin Fields or Mitchell Trubisky, who also with the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday just absolutely lit up the Detroit Lions again because he owns them. They're his bitch, always have been. He goes out there and also does the same thing that Justin Fields did. Fantastic first half. He's won the starting job. He might keep the job. And they're catering the offense around what Mitchell Trubisky does well. And it's insane to see how nice it feels to see an offense that goes with the flow of what your best players can do instead of trying to fit square pegs into round holes or prove that you're this quote unquote smartest person in the room. It's about winning. It's about getting yardage. It's about putting the ball in the end zone. And it seems like this offense is going to do that a lot more than people think, even with what is considered to be a limited wide receiver core, but a very good tight end core. And they do run that, what is that, that A2 set or whatever is that two tight end set?
The two tight end set, yes.
And so you're going to see some strengths, and this is they're not going to win this. I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl, but I think this team's going to flirt with 500. I think that it's going to be better than people realize, and I think that Justin Fields, with time and with just an offensive play calling, that's not going to get him killed. There's no Mike Martz issues here. There's no Matt Nagy issues here. They're not going to just keep banging their head against the wall to get something done. They're going to scheme around as opposed to scheme and just say you've got to do this. You got open receivers constantly now in this offense. I don't think I saw a wide open receiver in like 4 years of Matt Nagy's offense. It was like he was scheming to get him covered. Now everybody's open and Justin Fields has a couple seconds to recognize the field and he makes a throw. It's great. So for you, what did you see that you liked most? And you know, because the season, you know, next time we go on, it'll be after opening day. So what do you think about this Bears season and what are your expectations?
There's one thing that stands out to me more than anything else, and that's the offensive adaptability, meaning they are building an offensive game plan not only to the talent that they have, but also scheming against the talent that they're facing. So with Fields, you see him much more rolling out bootlegs, things of that nature. They're using his natural gifts and abilities to their advantage instead of bottling them up and saying, oh, we need you to do a 7-step drop. Well, he was a sitting duck doing a 7-step drop or a 5-step drop last year because the offensive line was horseshit. You know, he was just sitting there getting killed. This way they're allowing him to use his physical skills and make plays based off of that. I found it encouraging because Was it the Komet touchdown where he rolled out? And like you said, he used his eyes to distract from where he was actually throwing.
He sold it with his eyes.
That's why Komet is sort of standing there like, hey, look at me. You know, because I believe it was a rollout.
Yes, it was.
On the Komet touchdown. Yeah. So I really like that. I like the fact that, because to me, Nagy, Tressman, John Shoup, Mike Martz, were all these system guys. You had to fit into their system. They never sat down and truly coached. And when I say that, I mean they never sat down and said, well, this is what this guy does well. So let's build that into our offense. This guy does this well. So let's build that into our offense. I mean, to be honest, I've been watching the Bears since the days of Walter Payton. Kind of easy to game plan, you know, to build an offensive game plan when you got Walter Payton behind center. Okay, hand off Payton left, hand off Payton right, hand off Payton up the middle. Pretty simple to call that. But the game has changed, and finally people in Chicago are starting to recognize that this is not 1985 anymore. Football is an offensive game, not a defensive game anymore. I mean, if cornerbacks breathe on wide receivers, it's a penalty, you know, and you need to, the quarterback is 1A, 1B, the most important single sports figure in all of sports. I don't think the quarterback has the most impact in all of sports. There is one position I think has a bigger impact, can impact a game or a series much more than a quarterback. And that's a hockey goalie. If you get a hot hockey goalie, he could single-handedly carry a team to a championship. Quarterback can't necessarily do that unless you're talking about a guy like Dan Marino, which he never did, a Joe Montana or a John Elway, someone like that. But I find their offense encouraging. Let's see how it goes when you have a starting, when you are in the regular season and teams scheme for you and you scheme against those teams. That's what I want to see. I agree with you. They're not going to win the Super Bowl. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. And it's not that they're not going to be better. I just think the talent gap between them and the Tampas, the Green Bays, you know, the Rams, you know, the Bengals. I think the talent gap is too large this year. This year is a year where they can see what they really have. And if they are, and this goes to what we talked about with the Cubs and Sox too, where they scout themselves, because they have like $100 million next year that they're going to be able to use in free agency. So this year they really, really need to scout themselves and say, okay, we need to address, you know, we need a shutdown corner, or we need a number one wide receiver. So, you know, we need a center, whatever it may be, and go out and get it in free agency next year. Next year is when I'm really expecting the team to take huge strides, because they should have a year of self-assessment. They should know what their needs are, and they have the money to go get it. Mm-hmm. But I don't think this year is going to be the train wreck that a lot of the football experts are calling for it to be. But I will say this too, watching Hard Knocks on HBO, the Bears may have a problem with that Hutchinson kid in Detroit. The Bears may have a problem with him. I think a lot of teams may have a problem with him. Just throwing that out there, you know. But I don't think they're going to be the train wreck like, say, the Jets or the Giants. I don't think they're going to be that. I don't think they're going to win the division either. But I think they'll be entertaining football. I think they'll be in a lot of games. And I think the reason that they'll lose some of those games is because of the talent levels just not at where championship level teams are.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, you know, and you bring that up too, by the way, I do want to point this out that, I just asked the question cause there was this is a totally Cubs related, White Sox related. Yeah. There was a post, from Cheat Seats Pod about, the Kimbrel trade. But when you compare now Nick Madrigal to Pollock, even, Madrigal has a 0.5 WAR this year, and Pollock has a 0.1 WAR. And I'm wondering what Dizek said. Austin Dizek said, I don't think that's accurate. It's the defense. Know your stats. But I'm wondering if he's talking about Nick Madrigal's defense, because White Sox fans need to check the stats. Nick Madrigal's grading out as an above average major league second baseman. His outs above average as a second baseman is, let's see here, by position right now, and having only played like half the season, right? Mm-hmm. His outs above average are, where is he? He is ranked 16th in Major League Baseball in outs above average. So he is in the middle of all defensive second basemen. So the Nick Madrigal is a terrible defender this year. He's made zero errors and he's graded out. He's a +2 outs above average, which, I mean, if he gets one more, he'll be in the top 10. If he had three outs above average, he'd be 10th ranked second baseman in all of baseball defensively. So I think it's time to kind of throw that little whatever out. It might be out now that he's healthy and playing. He's actually fielded more ground balls and had more attempts this year than any season ever as a Chicago White Sox player. He's actually about to pass his total chances in one season than he had with the White Sox. And he basically had like two halvesies, right? So anyway,
two half seasons. Yeah.
So that's just side note, totally side note. I didn't want to bring it back. I want to keep back with the Bears, but that popped into my head. I wanted to say that before it went out there, because I'm sure people were like, what the hell? Nick Madrigal is not a shitty second baseman. He's at least league average, if not better than above average, a little bit better than average as a second baseman. He is literally one backhand up the middle from being in the top 10 when it comes to outs above. And so anyway, with what the Bears are doing,
let me say one thing about Madrigal.
Sure.
Let me say one thing about Madrigal. Part of the issue Sox fans have with Nick Madrigal, and I've said this before, is he was sold as something that he did not show at all.
Yep. It's kind of like Trubisky. It's like Mitch Trubisky.
Yes.
Nothing that Mitchell Trubisky will ever do will ever allow him to get out from the shadow, even though Deshaun Watson's a total dickbag. And yes, Patrick Mahomes became what Patrick Mahomes was, but nobody was talking about Patrick Mahomes.
It
was Watson or Trubisky at that point in that draft. Yes. Nobody was talking about Mahomes. Nobody. If you say you were, you're full of shit. And so you've got this, you know, this same thing, Madrigal, Trubisky. These guys were sold as something, and the expectation created this weird animosity with Chicago fans. Mm-hmm. I don't get that. And I don't think, maybe it's not just Chicago fans, but it is. I mean, it's just so weird to hate a player. He didn't choose to be drafted where he was drafted. He didn't choose to he didn't make that message. That's not he didn't send that man. Why is he the one that gets punished? Why is Mitchell Trubisky? Why can he go out and throw five first half touchdown passes and then you say, so what? He still sucks. I hate that guy. What a piece of shit. A guy who never says shit with a mouthful of manure. He's always been classy. He's always been a good person. And, you know, I just don't get it. And I think that, you know, I could see it happening to Justin Fields just as easily. So weird how Chicago fans take personal someone's struggles or their inability to live up to the expectations that specific. It's like they intentionally tried to like let you down.
It's like they're doing it on purpose just to fuck you.
Yeah. It's so weird. You know, I don't get that about just fandom in general. I just don't understand how you villainize someone. I mean, again, I looked at, you know, yesterday, there's a reason why I'm on this New York Yankees fans can suck it, is I read you know, when I stupidly clicked on the link of the story, you know, announcing Chasen signing with the Yankees, and it was like, oh shit, no, not again. This piece of shit. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to, I mean, this is why dads should never be on social media if their kid's a professional baseball player. And this is probably why I shouldn't either when it's one of my guys, and I should never click on those things because I wanted to jump through the screen and literally smack my ball sack on some of those turds for some of the stuff they were saying about Chasen. It pissed me off. And it's not personal. Like, the kid goes out there and busts his ass. Like, the kid was in tears when he found out he was traded to the Cardinals a couple years ago in his press conference. And these people are just shitbags to him, like, about him. Like, it's like, come on, man. And that's just humans in general. And I know that's a fan thing. It's just for the meatball section of fans. But man, those guys aren't stupid. Those guys aren't, they don't hide in a rock. They see that shit. You know, White Sox fans, what you put on social media, it's not into a vacuum. Cub fans, you're not screaming into the void. These dudes, and Marcus Stroman was a good guy he pointed that out yesterday, or 2 days ago, he took a guy to the mattresses. It was great. But these guys are on there, man. They see this shit. So you really think you're supporting your team by calling guys scumbags and losers and pussies? You think that shit goes over well in the locker room? You think those guys want to go to hell and back for you as a fan? When you're on there talking about how bad they are and insulting them and calling them a bunch of names, you don't deserve them. And that's just a fan thing in general. I mean, you can't support your team if you're out there talking shit about your team. I don't know about you, but my work, I don't know about that. The business model of telling people at your company how bad they suck while expecting them to still produce elite content or elite material or elite product, but you're telling them they suck the whole time. Do you think A, they want to stay there and be in your company? And B, do you think they really want to give that effort knowing that full well that the minute you have the worst day of your life and you don't get the job done, not because you weren't trying, but just because it just didn't happen that day, that they're going to come back and turn on you on a whim, like the breeze? It's shitty. It's shitty. And I'm seeing a lot of disloyalty from Sox fans towards the players. I'm seeing it towards, obviously, I see it from Cub fans. I saw it with KB. You know, you're seeing it sometimes, you know, with certain guys just on the roster that they take for granted. It just drives me nuts that I don't get how you could look. I think Javi Baez is a turd bucket, but that's because of Javi Baez behaviors that I know about that make him a turd bucket. Javi Baez playing baseball doesn't make him a turd bucket.
Right.
Okay. Guy going out and bust their ass doesn't make him a turd bucket. It's just guys that show their ass or are assholes in real life. Those guys deserve it. But man, I mean, you boo effort. You don't boo performance because it's you know what? If you can do it, fucking go on out there and do it yourself there, Tito. Yeah. Like that's just the problem that I have with it. It's just, I don't know.
I mean, Deshaun Watson, that's different.
Yep, he go deserves have it. Adam. Absolutely but deserves that.
Svo brings up a great point, and this is something that does bother me. You know, with all the people on Twitter who are sitting there going, Jerry Reinsdorf needs to die. You know, let me just say this. You may not like Jerry. That's fine. You know, I've met Jerry. I've talked to Jerry. I think Jerry is a great person. I say this specifically the way I'm saying it. I think Jerry is a great, caring person. There are players I know who he has helped who were in financial straits. Some are very well known, Scottie Pippen. Others, not so much. But there are things I think he's done with this team. I can never forgive him for 1994 as an example. But I would never, ever say, I hope that you die. Because that's just, grow fucking up. Seriously, grow fucking up.
I'll go out
wishing
here.
Wishing someone to die. Are you fucking serious?
I'll go out on a limb.
Have some goddamn respect.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go out here. I'll take it one step further. If you're someone that's out there saying that I can't wait or that Jerry deserves to die, you are an awful human being. You're a horrible freaking person. You can wish a whole lot of things. You can wish bad gas and a rough day in the shitter on somebody. That's fine. But wishing
you can wish someone to be fired, because I'm sitting there saying, asking the White Sox when Rick Hahn is being fired.
Yep, that's fine.
That's one thing.
But wishing someone to leave this planet, wishing them death because of a fucking game, a kid's game, baseball or football or basketball or anything, wishing death on anybody, to me is a pretty low thing. But I mean, I guess you could be okay wishing death on like terrorists and shit, but I don't even wish death on anybody, to be honest. But I think everyone can be redeemed. But wishing because of the franchise isn't making and having the success that you'd like, you're wishing someone that would die. It just, you're a horrible, horrible human being. And if that's you and you're listening to this show, I'm talking to you, because that is a line you don't cross. It's a game, okay? It's a pastime. It's not war. No one's hurting other people. It's a game. It's a pastime. It's play ball, not work ball. And here we are, some of these jack wagons out here wishing death on an old man because the White Sox aren't winning enough games this year. Take your lip, pull it up over the top of your head, and swallow real hard, meatball. You don't deserve to be at the ballpark, period.
Sorry, absolutely. Think, spin it this way. How would you like it if someone was saying that to you about one of your about yourself or one of your family members?
Yep. It's not cool.
Think about it that way.
I'd rip your jaw
off. Karma's a fucking bitch. Always remember that.
That's the shit. That's the stuff that you get your jaw ripped off for. There are very few things, but that's one of them. You know, you wish death or harm on people that I care about, you know, we're dancing. We're dancing. That's it. Period. Yeah. And I just, it's not okay. It's just, it's the toxic aspect of, you know, fandom. And this is something that you this year, I think I've seen it. It sucks, man. And I'll say this, I've been a big fan of White Sox Twitter. You know, Cubs Twitter drives me nuts because it is just, it's just can be really rough, a rough go at it too. But man, I always held White Sox Twitter up to this high standard. And this year, seeing how it's treated and how it's responded to the White Sox in this part of their journey, how much vitriol they've thrown out at anybody that's tried to stay positive. Like if you're someone that stays optimistic, you're going to get ganged up on White Sox Twitter.
Yes.
And that's been, it's not like this is happening in August. This has been happening since April. This is not something that just started in the summer. It's been going on since the first pitch of the season for the White Sox and White Sox Twitter. It's been insanely, like, it's been very depressing to me because I've always held White Sox Twitter to, honestly, to a higher standard than Cubs Twitter. But I'll say this now, I see no difference. I see no difference in baseball IQ. I see no difference in personality. There's nobody has the market lockdown or good or bad. I feel disappointed overall in all of this. And I, you know, it's kind of funny. The Cub fans have gotten back to like optimistic. It's, in fact, it's like almost you got to taper it back a little bit for some Cub fans because they're willing. They're just like, lose by 10. It's the best game ever. It's awesome. Yeah, like, we'll take it back. This would be a little bit more logical there too. But at least there's some positive optimism out there that, yeah, you know, you don't want to ever crap on super optimism and just you kind of want to be like, hey, by the way, that is Patrick Wisdom's first hit in like 17 at bats. So yes, it's a great deed, a home run finally, but blah, blah, blah. White Sox fans, it's like, screw you, Moncada, you piece of shit. Screw you, Eloy. Screw you, Tim Anderson. Screw everybody because they didn't get, you went 0 for 5 today, or they swung at the first pitch, or they rolled into a double. Screw you. You suck. I hate you. This guy's such a waste of life and oxygen. Like, it's just like, man, I'm sorry, but it matters. It matters to these guys. These guys feel that at the ballpark. And if you don't think that they do, and you're like, oh, they're $1 million players. You are so aloof to the reality of human beings and the experience of humanity. These guys feel it. These guys know it. They understand what positive and negative energy is. And when you're giving out negative energy at the ballpark, they feel it every single day. And guess what, White Sox fans? You are just as much of a responsible party in this train wreck of a season for the White Sox because there has been nobody there to pick up these players when they set foot on that baseball field. Nobody has been picking them up and giving them the ovation. They have to do something to get you out of your seat. And it's not that way. It's not that way. You should be getting them and picking them up when they're down, just like they pick you up when you're having a bad day when they go out and blast the Twins or something. You owe them that. The game owes you nothing. We all owe the game and act as such. Because White Sox fans, how you've treated the White Sox roster this year, other players look at that and go, I don't know about that fan base.
Thank you for saying that, because I was going to say, you know, also remember one thing. The White Sox are not a destination.
Nope.
And there are many factors as to why. The franchise, the way it's run is part of it. And these players talk to each other. If you get to a game before, while they're still stretching, you see them out behind second base all the time, chatting it up with other guys. And I can imagine the conversations are along the lines of, hey, I'm a free agent. What do you think of this place? Hey, what's going on over there? Why you guys suck so bad? You know, I could hear all these conversations going on. And just remember, culture and fan engagement play a factor in the overall appeal of a team to a prospective free agent. So does winning, by the way. So if you're a losing franchise, hence 2019 with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, $250 million guaranteed is not $300 million guaranteed. Maybe, just maybe, if you went $300 million guaranteed in fucking January instead of $250 in March, you get the player. Mm-hmm. But you had to be the smartest guys in the room, didn't you? Well, guess what? You outsmarted yourself.
And, you know, home field advantage isn't the turf or the dirt or the clubhouse or the angle of the mound as it faces home plate and the wind blowing out.
Or the dimensions.
Home field advantage is your fan base giving you energy when you have none. And there has been zero home field advantage for the White Sox since day one this year. And all of it stems with the early preconceived hate on Tony La Russa, and it spiraled into whatever this is. And this is where we can wrap this back up and put it back into the Bears kind of tunnel too, is now we, as a combined fan base, we're getting Cub fans rolling into the Bears season with a little bit of optimism because the Cubs are starting to push towards being competitive again. They're on the other side now. They're moving towards competitive again. The White Sox, though, on the other hand, have had a very disappointing season. We're about to combine these two fan bases, and we're about to get a combination of optimism and pessimism that I don't think it's been a while since it's been like this for a Bears team that could very well use a whole bunch of optimism, come out of the gate, win one or two games of the season, and all of a sudden it feels right and it feels good. And mm-hmm. But the same thing happens with Bears fans. And it's very important that the Bears fans come out here and keep an open mind. But I think it helps knowing that this is kind of like the next step in a larger game plan. We know that it's not probably this year, but we know that they're moving in the right direction. I think the Bears have made great moves that have kind of like started to push that envelope and start getting there. You know, they're going to have $120 million in cap space after this season. They're probably going to hopefully extend Roquan Smith. Hopefully that's all just hubbub. And they're going to have a franchise team next year that's going to be competing for the Super Bowl next year. And that's what I truly do believe, that with the salary that they have and the opportunities and options that they have in free agency and whatnot. But this is where now the rubber meets the road for fans. The Mississippi River is about to spill into the Amazon, and we're about to find out what happens when two very different mindsets combined as fan bases. And so I'm curious to see how this works, but I do think that Bears fans need to open up and be that optimism. Take that optimism. This, you know, with any of the franchises, these guys are out there busting their ass for us and putting out, you know, being on the field, you know, going out on the field and flying around there for us fans. They're doing that for us in their paycheck, obviously. But I hope that this year's Bears season is chock full of Bears fans, really encouraging. And you know, I hope the boo birds are gone. I hope that it's time to just embrace this part of the process and you know, enjoy this part. Sorry, I'm going to use it. I hope that, you know what? White Sox fans can suck it. I'm not done with enjoy the ride, because you know what? You got to enjoy the ride. That's not a cliche. Unfortunately, no one's enjoyed this season. It doesn't seem like they've enjoyed anything since day one. So they were just insufferable is what that tells me. You can make something out of it. That's why I love my guy Southside Zoe. He's been positively optimistic this entire time. He's still there. He still hasn't given up on this team. You know, he gets frustrated sometimes, but you'll never hear a bad word out of his mouth about an individual person, unless they show their ass and they don't hustle, like Dallas Keuchel, right? That was deserving. But it takes a lot to get him hashtag dunned on people. And that's something that, you know, you're the same way too. And I know that Swo is the same way, and a lot of the guys that are. But then there's also some of the biggest accounts and the loudest mouths on White Sox Twitter that are far easier. You know, they make their clout being negative and pessimistic and disrespectful, and
they are more interested in the Sox losing so that they can pat themselves on the back and say, "See, I told you,
bingo,
I told you."
Yeah,
you know, and the sign of true character is having the ability to say, "Hey, I told you," but also having the ability, notice I did it earlier in this podcast, of saying, "Yeah, I said that." Yeah, I have to be transparent and say that's not the case anymore.
Right. Absolutely wearing it. Now, you know, I struggle with that a lot. I know that people make fun of me sometimes, but I do admit when I'm wrong. I mean, I'm wrong quite a bit. So, I mean, it's just that you probably just, of the billion things that I'm wrong about, you only heard, you know, half of the, you know, the half of half 500 million I'm wrongs. But, you know, that's it. So we're heading into the season. So we've got some optimistic stuff coming our way. You know, the Bears open up with the San Francisco 49ers on September 11th. Is that right? September 11th? Is that?
Yes. Sunday, September 11th. I will be in attendance at the game with Sir Walter Money, and I believe we will be meeting up with our friends Vo, who I believe he is taking his nephew there for his 16th birthday. I think I have the year right. Is Vo still in the comments? So correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's Trey's 16th birthday. Vo being the good uncle that he is, taking him there as a birthday present. So
wonderful. And this is the best. It's the best time of year now. You got baseball.
Oh, yeah,
It should be. Even if, I mean, again, I'm fine. I've enjoyed this Cup season, to be honest. It's been stress-free for me. I haven't had anxiety or anger or like vitriol. Jed Hoyer pisses me off quite a bit when he just refuses to say rebuild. But I've had zero problem with the hustle and the individual players. It's been great. You know, it's been actually, you know, last year was such a stressful season and almost overload toxic because, again, it was like the trade deadline and with KB and everything. There was a lot of emotional attachments. Spirit's been fine. And I go into this Bears season with the same kind of mindset. I'm like actually stoked to see this just kind of stuff plays out. There's that optimism there. And White Sox fans, it ain't, I'm going to say this, and you can tell me at the end, you know, our last thing as we kind of wrap this up. I will say this, go see, you know, if you haven't watched She-Hulk, watch She-Hulk. She-Hulk's really funny. I'm going to get this out of the way real quick. She-Hulk is a really good MCU sitcom. The funniest line I've ever seen in an MCU film was literally him talking to her when she's about to tell, She-Hulk is telling Bruce Banner that she's about to represent Abomination as his lawyer. And he goes, oh, we got over this. He sent me a really nice letter of apology a couple years ago. Even a really sweet haiku. He goes, listen, we're not even the same people that we were back then. Literally. And then she looks up at the screen and goes, ha ha, and then goes right back to the scene again. Meaning they was making fun of the fact that Ed Norton was there and Eric Bana has been the Hulk. And then he was actually talks about how he wants it almost to be like a Doctor Who or a James Bond where like everybody gets their chance to finally play the Hulk at some point. But
yeah,
it's a great show. So watch that. But my last little thoughts for White Sox fans, if I can just part this again, I'm a Cub fan. You guys can tell me to go shove off Cub fans, but you have 4 weeks left in this season. And if you knew that just throwing caution to the wind and supporting your team positively, optimistically, without showing up with signs like sell the team and booing everybody for God knows for sneezing, go in there for 4 weeks and give it your best positive fandom. If you really knew that doing that for the next 4 weeks would get the White Sox in the postseason, perhaps get them some momentum and help get them maybe make it even a little run at this because the American League to me is wide open as opposed to the National League, wouldn't you do it? So my request or my challenge to White Sox fans is bring the positivity for 4 more weeks. When the season's over and if the White Sox don't make the playoffs, then you can drop the nukes. But you got 4 weeks and you're not out of this thing. Give it what you can to pick up your team and give those guys the positive momentum to help cross the finish line and get there. They can't do it without you. And I mean that 100% as someone who speaks with pro baseball players all the time. It is 100% important that the fans are there supporting the players and not there to bury them. Don't bring a shovel, bring a pom-pom for the rest of this 4 weeks. And then when it's over, you can bring out the bats, you can throw Tony La Russa in and bring him out into the cornfield and you can totally Tony Spilotro him if you want. I don't care. But save it till the season's over. You have 4 weeks for the rest of this offseason. Finish. You're down 5 games. A 10-game winning streak, a 9-game winning streak, which they've done multiple times this year, and a couple extra wins here and there, and I think Cleveland's peaked, and I think the Twins are just not going to, they're just going to kind of hover at 500. They have an opportunity to do this if they can just get something going. And rock bottom has been, I felt like rock bottom every week, it seems, especially after losing the Diamondbacks, but go out there and just make something magical happen. Magic doesn't happen without fans believing, and it starts there. So I challenge White Sox fans to go out there and finish this season on a positive note. And then at the end of the season, after everything's over, then you can reevaluate and then you can drop your nukes all you want. But don't drop the nuke during the season. There's still games to be won and a possibility that you could still taste that sweet postseason. So there's my challenge to White Sox fans. That's all I got for tonight, Pete. What are your final thoughts? And let's take it on out.
Well, I really got nothing to follow that up with. All I'll say is, you know, oh, one other thing I'll add. I know you're excited about this. I am too. This weekend in IMAX, they are releasing the original masterpiece, Jaws, in IMAX theaters. I've had the good fortune of seeing it on the big screen before. I'm really excited about seeing it in the IMAX format. So if you get the opportunity, definitely go see it. Go support the movie theaters. They're wonderful places to go. And also,
Saturday, by the way, Saturday is the 3rd. It's Saturday the 3rd, I think it is. It's Cinema Day. And around the country, $3 movies this weekend on Saturday. Check your local movie theaters. $3 to go see a regular movie in the theater. It's Cinema Weekend. They're trying to encourage audience members to come back to the theaters. And they're selling tickets a lot, like 4,000 nationwide. $3 tickets for like current movies, like Bullet Train.
That's awesome. And also I'll add one other thing too. Sunday night or Sunday and Monday. I think I'm going to be going Monday. They are doing a 40th anniversary screening through Fathom Events. It's a great website, fathomevents.com. It tells you all old movies that are being re-released for, you know, two or three showings at the movie theaters. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan is coming back to the shows Sunday, Monday, and Wednesday, I believe. Khan!
Amazing.
Yes. So definitely, if you can, get all over that. It is, as a Star Trek fan that I am, it is by far the best Star Trek movie of them all. First Contact is a close, not too close, but a close second. But definitely get out there. Go enjoy movie theater, Dave, with those $3 tickets. Go support the local movie theaters. Go support your team. No pro football this weekend. I know there's college football because I know our guys, Vo, is very excited about the Florida State LSU game Sunday night, I believe it is. And all I can say to my guys, Vo, is go Tigers. And with that, I will turn it over to our resident psychologist, our resident wise man, our resident philosopher, the one and only, yeah, dog, take it away. Hello, pop.
Not only do I think some words are funny, I also think people are funny. And they think when they say words, it's funny. I'm here to tell them, people, it's not funny. It's not even remotely funny. Yeah, dog.